Hello and welcome to another of the episodes and podcasts in the Climate and Local Government series, in which, in this case, I'm be interviewing one of the mayoral candidates from the Nelson-Tasman region. I'm Lindsay Wood and I'm director of the climate strategy company Resilience Limited, and in this case, I'll be interviewing Nelson mayoral candidate Matt Laurie. Now, so in this case, the interview just launches straight into the first question. So I will start by welcoming Matt and saying how much I enjoyed talking with him. He was the first of the mayoral candidates, the six mayoral candidates that I interviewed, and he started off on a good note. So here is my first question to candidate Matt Laurie. It's 4 years since the IPCC 2018 special report signalled a decarbonisation trajectory of a daunting 7.6% a year on year from 2020 to keep us within a 1.5 degree global warming limit. It's 3 years since our Zero Carbon Act legislated for commensurate responses, with subsequent lack of effective action plus regional growth. That's now close to 10% reduction every year. If elected mayor, Matt, what would be the key strategies you'd put in place to optimise your community's chances of successfully decarbonising at such a formidable rate and on an ongoing basis?
Well, Lindsay, it is a challenge. I think the place we have to start is with transport in Nelson Whakatū. And I think the way to do that is by massively increasing our public transport use and active travel. And we can do that. We already have an appetite for that. We just need to really have the we have to have the courage of our conviction. And I think one of the ways we can do it is by making public transport free for children, students, apprentices, community card holders, and total mobility card holders. That would be something I'd absolutely want to do as soon as possible. And we also have to follow through on our plans to significantly improve the in-bus service. We have to build a culture of public transport use in this town. And we can add to the service and make it better. But unless we just start getting people making use of public transport as an everyday part of their lives, we're going to struggle. And I think we can start with our young people. That will help us get there. We can make our buses electric. I think that's the way the whole world's going, and Nelson Whakatū has to be going in that direction too. We have to provide our buses with priority lanes. If we have priority lanes so that people know that the bus will be faster than being in their car by themselves at the same time as everyone else, and we make public transport free to a large chunk of the population, public transport in Nelson Whakatū will become irresistible, and that is how we have to actually get it. Look, if we can make it possible for all of our city's children and their parents to safely walk or ride to their local school, that will also make a difference. You know, to me, I understand why people want to drive their kids to school because they're worried about safety, but really this is a fabulous place for walking and riding to school, and it adds so much to kids' lives as well as getting our emissions down. We need to build on our existing walking and cycling network. That includes lighting the railway reserve. That will be better for everyone, not just people who are on the reserve for transport reasons. We can encourage people to get around on active transport and walk by significantly improving safety at roundabouts. We have to ensure that Waka Kotahi delivers on its plan for transforming transport across the city, including those priority lanes I mentioned, and also the game-changing 4-metre-wide walkway cycleway around the waterfront. We've got to keep getting our... We've got to do more to get organics out of our landfill. We've already started work on that. We have to do more. We have to expand the community compost program and also double down on efforts to relieve the hospitality sector of their food scraps. And then a lot of it comes down to housing, getting people living close to the central city or right in the central city so they don't have to drive places to live their lives. And part of that is reducing greenfield development, doing more to encourage compost. We should do more to discourage coal. And really importantly, Lindsay, we have to communicate. You know, the mayor of a city, I think, is someone who can never communicate too much. That's my background. That's what I want to do. And I want to use that to help us get our emissions down.
We're among the most energy profligate societies in history, and much of our greenhouse gas emissions comes from fossil fuels, with transport emissions around 94% of individual emissions in our region. Decarbonising our energy sector is a key to decarbonising our economy, but the logistics are daunting, electrification of almost everything. With New Zealand being especially vulnerable to key global supply chain issues, and the net energy gain of all renewable energy sources except good hydro are being inadequate to sustain our society in its present form. What do you think, Matt, the energy future of our region will look like in 25 years? And what would you advocate to prepare our region to make the most of that energy future?
Yeah, really good question, Lindsay. So I've actually struggled with this one for some time when it comes to solar. And the conclusion I've come to is that we have to lighten the load on the grid, and solar is a big way that we're going to be able to do that. Now, I know there's plenty of question marks over the amount of carbon that goes into producing a solar panel and what you do with them at the end of their life, the useful life. But unless we invest in solar, the technology will not improve in terms of both of its effectiveness and its footprint. And I feel the same way about electric vehicles. I think the future is largely going to be about solar as a service and the opportunity that increased solar will create to actually set up microgrids that give us greater resilience and help us transition in a more sort of climate-friendly way. And that's going to actually have a lot to do with us working with companies that are already invested and doing good work in that area, companies like Solar Zero, Solar City and others. So I think the technology is out there, but I think we need to collaborate a lot more. And then I think another key message is that we have only so much electricity, we have so much power, we have so much generation. How do we use it best? And I think technology is going to actually help us do that in terms of people using power at times when, that there's less demand on the grid, so less power production is required. And I also just think encouraging a more sustainable lifestyle doesn't mean telling people that they can't actually, have power and that they can't have a vehicle. With in terms of the impact that EVs are going to have, I think, more and more people are going to get EVs once you've driven one, as you have, Lindsay, you own one, we own one. You just think, why didn't we do this years ago?
Exactly.
Obviously, there are still challenges with them. And they're not the answer if what we're going to do is take every vehicle that's on the road and replace it with an EV. But what we have to do is say to people and encourage people to think that, it's great to have a vehicle. It's very useful, but it's not a mass transit transport choice. It's not a great one. It's about using the electric vehicle for the things that you need a vehicle for, and using public transport, active transport, and walking for those other trips. And I honestly think we can do it. I know more and more people who are only having one car for their family, whereas a generation ago they might have had two, they might have even had three. And that's all about just using an EV in a more smart way. And I think if we can do that, then we can still have the benefits that come with private vehicle ownership or private vehicle use. And at the same time, we can reduce our demands on our generation means, which has got to be the way forward.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? It's a big challenge. I'll talk to you about an aspect of that later on, but there's a sardonic joke about sea level rise that the poor get moved and the rich get seawalls. While expert Belinda Story would suggest that might not do the wealthy much good in long term either, the real point is that disadvantaged people normally become more disadvantaged as a result of upheaval or crisis. In a climate context, there's frequent reference to striving for a just transition, but global evidence suggests that is largely an unfulfilled aspiration. If you were elected Mayor Matt, what would you like your legacy to be in the area of a just transition in climate responses, and how would you go about achieving that, please?
Thanks, Lindsay. Well, one thing I would like is for people to actually understand what the words just transition mean, because as you've pointed out, it's one of those buzz terms that we hear so much of. But I think most Kiwis, you know, if you ask them what it really means in terms of people's lives, they'll shake their heads or look a bit worried, to be honest. But I think there's lots of ways we can do it. And here in El Safakatu, again, I go back to transport. If we make public transport free, starting with children, students, total mobility card holders, community service card holders, if we make public transport free, then I think that is a step towards a just transition. That is a step towards saying, as a society, we're going to move away from fossil fuels, but we're going to make it fair. And I think people will get that when you pitch it to them like that. And I think you start with children and students and those other groups that I mentioned. And the long-term goal is to go public transport free for everyone. I don't think that the city can afford that just yet. But I think if we can show some leadership in this space, then we will actually get the interest of Waka Kotahi. And I think other councillors, other progressive councils are looking at doing similar things. And I think if we can actually change the mindset when it comes to how we fund people getting around, we will have a future. We can have a future where public transport one day will be free. And that will be actually a really positive step towards just transition. I think also, and this is just huge, you know, having more affordable, secure, climate-friendly housing so that people can live in a place where they, as they go about their lives, their carbon footprint is smaller, but they haven't had to spend $1 million to be able to do it. And that means, I think, Nelson City doing more with Kāinga Ora and our community housing providers in terms of creating space places for people to live that are close to town or right in town. Now, we're already working with Kāinga Ora on this proposed development right in the middle of town. I think that's a fantastic step forward. I think that is a just transition move, and I think we need to do more of that. I think that's going to be a real success, and we're going to find more people demanding that kind of option in terms of where they live. And I also think we should be exploring this idea that I've called the airspace apartments concept. You might have seen, if you haven't, look it up on Stuff or find it online on my page. But it's a concept that I've been working with Pierre Hammond, who's an architect and landscape architect, Ursula Bauman, and it's to actually use the airspace above squares like Buxton Square to create these sorts of houses, places for people to live that actually help us achieve a just transition. We need to have more access to cheaper, healthier food, like Nelson Marlborough Health's Hapori Boxes scheme, particularly initiatives that make it easier for people to move away from eating meat without having to spend $1 billion every time they go to the supermarket. And another thing I'd add is I think we need to encourage the government to make its EV rebate scheme, which applies to vehicles, new motor vehicle, new EVs. It should apply to e-bikes as well. We can get so many more people into e-bikes because they are so much more affordable than EVs in terms of cars. That's something we should definitely pursue as well.
I'm with you on the e-bike thing. It's a no-brainer, really, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally. Yeah, they missed that. I don't know why.
They probably thought I was too much like helping people with recreation, or maybe they just got fiscally tight on it. I don't know. But anyway, we'll see. But
yeah.
In reports dealing with climate-related initiatives, there are often comments such as a particular course of action not being cost-effective or not making economic sense. And yet there's almost never reference to the time frame being considered and almost never comparisons with the cost of not taking action, which specialists like Lord Nicholas Stern highlight are generally orders of magnitude greater. This is often exacerbated by the imbalance of high upfront costs being needed to realise longer-term benefits. Over what timescales do you think the costs and benefits of climate action should best be evaluated? And if you were elected mayor, how would you reconcile the often unresolved conflict of prioritising funds now for benefits over a much longer term?
Yeah, it's a challenge. But I think the first thing we have to do, Lindsay, is think about how we pitch our climate response. Like this issue of the imbalance of upfront costs is actually less of a problem if the projects that we're talking about actually benefit people for multiple reasons, not just climate change. I'll give you an example. Waikatahi are talking about, they have said that so within 10 years they want to do a renewed seawall around our waterfront. Now, that doesn't just represent adaption and present a huge opportunity for mitigation. It's good for transport, it's good for the economy, it's good for resilience, it's good for recreation. Saving the waterfront from the sea will also have real cultural benefits. So I think sometimes we get hung up on the imbalance of upfront costs and see that as a reason to not charge ahead with some things. I really think it's important that everything we do, we say, this is how it's going to benefit you. This is how it's going to benefit your city. This is how it's going to benefit your kids. This is how it's going to benefit the economy. And it has massive benefits for our climate change response as well. So that's the first thing I'd say. In terms of how we evaluate those sorts of projects, then I think we need to do it at least on an annual basis, because so much of our success will be defined by public take-up. So, you know, if we're, if we're doing things in terms of trying to get people to get more into active transport, and they're not working, then I want to know within a year whether or not they're working so that we can pivot to a response that does work. I think that one of the problems with human beings is we're just not equipped to, we're not wired to respond to threats that are 20, 30 years away. So, like I said, if we can go back to these things that benefit everyone and they have a climate response and we can measure them on an annual basis, that will really help us go forward.
Now we come to giving you a magic wand. Thanks for engaging with the questions you have, but now's your chance to put forward your own ideas. Kindly imagine you've been gifted a magic climate strategy wand. If your candidacy is successful and you could conjure up any other single climate-focused council strategy, please tell us what it would be and why you see it as important.
So, Lindsay, anyone who's followed me on council will not be surprised by this. I think it's not quite the silver bullet, but it's definitely the thing we can do that will make the most difference. We have to embrace active transport in a whole new way. We have the start of an active transport revolution. But, you know, there is so much work to be done and there are so many benefits to be gained. And e-bikes are a really big part of it. Like, active transport isn't just a way to get people from A to B. It's also about, you know, fighting obesity. It's about people developing greater connections to the communities in which they live. It's about, with kids, it's about fostering independence and problem-solving skills. It's about fun. It's about our mental health. It's about our climate response as well. And I think we are heading in the right direction, but we have got to double down on active transport, because I think the sight of a person who's happy and healthy riding a bike, that needs to be an iconic image of Nelson Whakatū. When people see that image, I want them to think Nelson Whakatū, because you know, we're getting there. We've got the most walking and cycling to work and school in the country, but we can go so much further because we've got the climate to do it and we've got the population to do it. And people, Nelsonians love being active. They love getting out and about. But we still have all these issues, and we've got, you know, problems with our network that still put people off. So if we can double down on that, then I think we'll make a really big difference. And it'll make people feel good about how they're responding to climate change, giving them an opportunity to do that in a way that directly benefits them in their lives. You know, benefits their pocket, benefits their fitness, benefits their mental health. I think it's just a massive opportunity for us. And I think also it's the way forward because it's a positive thing. I think if we keep trying to scare people about climate change and the polar ice caps melting, which of course is massive, but there's a thing about human beings, they will disengage unless it's something right in front of them, like a pandemic that could be out in the street. They will put it off. They'll put their response off. There's a line from the film American Beauty that I love, which is worth considering. It goes like this: never underestimate the power of denial. this is how a lot of human beings operate. We've got to be conscious of that. And so I say, let's get on our bike, let's get on our scooters, and let's fix the climate problem and get healthy at the same time. So if we get that right and we do more to get inner city living happening, including new medium rise builds and people living above our existing shops, we'll really be on the right track. And finally, we have to lead by example. If I'm lucky enough to be elected mayor of Nelson Whakatū, I'll be taking a motor vehicle off the road by declining the Merrill car and instead replacing it with the Merrill e-bike. I think this is a great city to ride a bike. I ride a bike all the time. I think I might need an e-bike if I'm the mayor because I don't want to turn up to places hot and sweaty, but that's definitely something I'll be doing.
Well, as I said at the beginning, this was the first interview, and I didn't do my wrap-up very well there, did I? So I'll take this opportunity to thank Matt very much for being available for the interview, and I hope you, like me, enjoyed hearing what he had to say about the Nelson region. With the close of that, I do hope that you get to listen to some of the other podcasts with other mayoral candidates, because as well as Matt Laurie, we've got interviews with Rowan and O'Neill Stevens, with Richard Osmiston, with Tim King of Tasman, with Ali Cook, a Tasman candidate, Mike Carvey, a candidate for Tasman. So you've got lots of options of people to listen to. Thanks again for joining me for this podcast. Kia kaha for the climate.